Someone is waiting just for you. Spinning wheel, spinning true. Drop all your troubles by the riverside. Catch a painted pony on the spinning wheel ride.
Hi, it's Catherine Latimer of the John Howard Society of Canada. And I'm joined by my co-host, Lawrence De Silva, an ex-federal prisoner who spent more than 19 years in federal custody. We are bringing you a series of podcasts titled Voices Inside and Out, in which former prisoners and others share their stories about prison life and returning to communities. Hi, we're very pleased to be at John Howard Society of Ottawa, and I'm here with Lawrence De Silva and our special guest, David Barker, who works at the John Howard Society of Ottawa, has his own experience at reintegration, and is working on a program with men who are reintegrating. Thanks very much for joining us, David.
Thank you.
Maybe you could start off by telling us a little bit about your own experience when you were reintegrating back into the community after your experience behind bars.
Once you're released, the reintegration is not an easy task, and it wasn't easy on me. You do run into issues of financial issues, background checks, employment, residences, places to go in general. You're not given anything when you come out. You're not given the opportunity to maybe apply for anything. All of this has to be done when you're released. There's no application forms that can be filled out for Ontario Works or anything, ODSP, any of those programs while you're incarcerated. So when you're coming out, you need some guidance and you need some assistance in getting some of these programs underway and hopefully being able to succeed, because it is a tough goal when you're reintegrated back in.
And just for the listeners, how long did you spend inside?
Just a little over 11 months.
11 months. Nice.
And so you were in a provincial facility.
Provincial then, institution.
Ontario provincial facility.
So you felt it, yes. The deprivation of being away and losing your freedom. It's a good thing that you're doing here. I'd like to hear more about your program.
Well, our program here is called Justice Involved Housing. Its main focus is to reintegrate inmates that are coming out of jail or out of penitentiaries and reintegrate them into society and help them along the way with everything that we think they're going to encounter.
Because you've encountered it yourself.
Exactly.
Right? And building this program, how did it start?
Well, the way the program started was it's a City of Ottawa initiative.
Great.
Nice.
And the initiative is being done so that the people that are being released are not going back into institutions.
Wicked.
The number of male people that are going back into the institutions is alarming.
Mm-hmm.
The number continues to get high.
Yeah.
It doesn't continue to drop down.
Yes.
So this program now moving ahead will eventually affect that number, and it will make that number go down.
And we're trying to obviously grow that number as much as we can, right? Like we heard there was a limit on the guys that could be housed within that program right now. Like I guess it was like, what, 15?
Yeah. Our client base is at 15, and it can't exceed 15. They can stay in the program for pretty well as much time as needed to get them reintegrated.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, if they do reintegrate well and are a success story, then after a year, we can release them from the program and then add another new client in.
Oh, that is beautiful. We got to grow that number, right? So we really do.
There's a lot of
people
kind of that
do need help. And I mean, what you're doing and what I'm hearing, it's amazing. And because I've been one of those prisoners who was affected by coming back and forth to the system. It's all I knew. It was what I was accepting outside. I didn't have a drug problem, but I mean, I had a crime problem. So it was, I didn't know how to break that off and reintegrate. Mashallah, we're learning that now. But yes, please continue. It was...
When you indicate, how do you choose the 15, given that there are so many who would be interested in...
And or are there other people who are coming to you like with different charges, like some guys violent, some guys nonviolent?
In our program, we don't spend a whole lot of time looking at the offense
Very good.
That the person is
Very good.
Committed.
Very good.
Okay, we right now we're working
anybody with, and everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, we love to hear that.
Now, one of the guidelines that we use is recommendations and references from the institutions themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very good working relationship at OCDC through our social worker there from John Howard. We have a very good relationship at St. Lawrence in Brockville from the social workers there. And they'll bring names forward, and then we will go to the institution and interview them. Now, there is guidelines that you have to follow on the interview. Okay, if... First off, they have to have shown a pattern of homelessness, because that's who we're zeroing in on.
Yeah.
That's
the people
great.
That are
well,
homeless.
That's good, because...
If you're coming out of the institution
yeah, and you, ain't getting
you have
kicked
a girlfriend
to the street.
Yeah, yeah. Or
well,
a spouse
no, yeah.
or
of course, of course.
Whoever you, that you're going
you're
to live with.
You're not getting kicked to the street.
That's right.
Yeah, you help, so, the, help the most vulnerable, yeah. for sure.
It's an astonishing number of prisoners who are released into homelessness.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of guys, and I just want to say this, a lot of guys, they don't have family. You see what I mean? Yeah. And if they do... They don't have that family bond where, like, it's like, oh, hi, you know, hi, I'm back, you know, and hugs and kisses, you know what I mean? It's a tragic story in there for a lot of men, mm-hmm. right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's so you're a picking, blessing. You're getting the hard to house.
Absolutely, we're getting the hard to house, and that's the challenge of it. And a lot of these guys that we're dealing with now, we're finding that they've never had housing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they've never signed a lease.
They were already
lease,
like that.
So
they
I'm
were
teaching
already,
them
yeah,
how to sign a
yeah,
lease.
Yeah.
They've never rented anything than maybe, yeah. you know, paying their
so
mom
there
and
is
dad
no,
some
like,
room and board.
Yeah, there is no rental history. And
no.
How do you help them with that? Because, like, I faced that coming out of federal custody where I didn't have a rental history. So, like, how do you guys do it down there for these guys that are getting housing?
Well, there's
stuff?
A number of ways that you can do it. First off, if you're with a community housing provider,
mm-hmm.
okay, the housing history
oh,
is,
that all
is
sounds
not
good.
Really
yeah. Yeah,
that important. They,
yeah,
don't,
okay,
they don't pay
okay,
a lot
yeah.
of
attention
to
that.
That.
Okay.
You know, if you owe them money, now
yeah,
they're paying
oh, yeah,
attention.
Oh, yeah, they're
to
on you. Oh, yeah.
If you don't
yeah.
owe them money, they're not paying too much
okay.
attention to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can create... housing history mm-hmm. for somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, using
yeah.
your, yeah. using an address or something that they may have done room and board at.
Yeah, once, yes,
you know,
twice,
shelters,
yes.
You can still use the
yeah.
shelter address.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So there is avenues, yeah. yeah.
I've housed two of people in my program
yeah.
simply on word of mouth that I'm going to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden the landlord is saying,
oh, I love that.
Oh, wait
I
a
love
second
that.
Now. I've
I
got
love
a guy
that. So you're
in
like really
week.
Out there pounding pavement doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we do house visits no. regularly.
Oh, I like that.
And
I like that.
Do speak to the landlords and,
yeah.
and they,
yeah.
they
yeah.
like that. So
yeah.
all of a sudden the housing history
yeah.
is not as important.
Well, you could see why, right? Like just, you know, it's a good relationship that's bouncing back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you're also just, you know, showing those people who gave these people chances at their, you know what I mean, their residence, you know, to live a life. Like, I mean, you have the right to live when you come outside. Like, I mean, you know, it's a very important right that, you know, you have a right like everybody else. Like, it's to have a roof over your head, food in your tummy. I mean, these are very important
there
things.
There are certainly huge prejudices against people with criminal records getting housing. I mean, landlords will often ask that if there's a criminal history, and then they will not take the person.
Mm.
And there's no protection for people until they get a pardon from that kind of discrimination. So it's really
yeah.
a difficult thing. And the studies show that it's homeless is bidirectional. So people who are homeless are more likely to become involved in the criminal justice system, and those that are being released into homelessness are more likely to be
subjected.
Or released from prison, likely
yeah.
to be homeless.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Subjected to that same
it's a
environment.
Nasty cycle. Yeah, so it's great that your program really
no,
focuses on the housing.
It's
is it
sad.
Part of the housing
it's sad what these
initiative?
Guys go through. It's sad what these guys go through, but it is beautiful what you are doing because you're actively saving lives here. That's what I believe. So there's 15 at a time. What else do you guys offer through the program?
Well, once we establish you in the program, and the first and foremost thing is to get you housing.
Housing, yes, yes.
And I probably should say that it's not without its challenges,
mm.
because there are landlords in the city
yes.
who will not rent to anybody that has a criminal
history, yes, yes.
There's, you know, a major landlord in the city who now is operating all crime-free buildings. Now,
yeah.
the problem with that is that they're not paying any attention to the offense
yeah.
or what the sentence was
yeah.
or when it happened.
Yeah, yeah. Even with sex offenses, there's already a registry for that. So, you know what I mean? So I believe everybody should be given housing, but with sex offenses around kids and buildings and stuff like that, you know, there's certain things that have to go with that. But to blanket a guy who did a B&E, a guy who did an armed robbery, you know, a guy, you know, like it just doesn't compute with me. And it's not that I want to discriminate against anybody who has any offense. I want us all to have housing, but it's certain steps. Like when I hear, you know, like they did that in that building, like that's, that sends chills up my back, because after doing 19 years in prison, like I have serious charges. I can't take those back. You know what I mean? I can't, like, until I get my pardon. And even then I might not be able to get a pardon because of my offense cycle. Like, you know, like it had a lot of history with it. So in hearing that, it's just, it feels like I don't want to rent from that guy, and I can't even go near that building. And yeah, that's scary. Scary.
It's very challenging for people. And a lot of the is this part of the Housing First money?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So that's good. So that's the idea, that you get the housing first, and then you build the social supports around the person.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So once you get the housing, where do you go next? I guess does it depend on the individual?
Well, yeah, it would depend on the individual and what the individual needs are, because we will help them reestablish identification, which is a big thing, is that people don't have the ID. So we'll steer them in the right direction for the identification. Health cards are a huge issue. So that's, you know, a stepping stone that we have to look at.
Is there a process that you use directly to help these guys expedite that? Are the health cards sent back to your facility or either here at the John Howard? Like, how are these guys getting them?
Basically, they have to go and make an application for the card.
Are they getting those applications inside?
But if you're born in Ontario,
yes,
you know, or you're an Ontario resident, it's very easy to get the card and get the card replaced. It's when missing information or you haven't had one before, it stalls the system. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it impossible. You know, these guys can go to Service Ontario. They pretty well have to do it all on their own. I can guide them through it and go step by step with them and go with them. But they have to appear. Signatures have to be done. Pictures have to be taken.
Yeah, yes.
So
yes,
it's a challenge.
Yes.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it can
these
be
guys
done.
Are, yeah, these so, guys are getting them. And that's what's most important.
Yeah. And they need those health cards.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next process is, while they're there, is we encourage them to get the Ontario ID card.
Yes.
Because the health card can't be used in a lot of places with ID.
Yeah, yeah.
So now get the Ontario ID card while you're there at the same time, and now we can push forward. Okay. It's a quick process. People probably that are not connected to the system don't know this, but when you get released papers. Your picture is on that release documents that you get.
In the provincial system, yes.
So that can be used as identification. That can be used to start the process of getting a health card. That can be used to start the process of getting an Ontario card.
I wish federal was getting that, because we didn't get out with
that.
No,
it's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Like, I came out with my federal ID and couldn't use that. You know what I mean?
No, and
with
my own picture. You know, they have, right? Maybe it's because they're used to dealing with people from the provincial system, but the woman at Service Ontario kept saying, well, where's your letter indicating where you're going to be living?
Yeah.
And he's saying,
that's why
well,
I was just like shaking
expiry,
my head. I'm shaking
no
my
letter.
Head when you're saying this, because, like, yeah, I know you guys get it in provincial, but we don't get none of that. We don't get none of that in federal, and they just kick you out. It's very hard to deal with. Like, I mean, especially after 19 years, you know what I mean? So, like, it's just, you know, it's a time. But I'm God bless you guys for getting these guys ID.
Will most of them have had OHIP cards before and lost them, or are they just?
That would be an interesting question. I think most of them would at one time have had a health card. But I think more or less they probably let them lapse when they get into the teenage years or they get out on their own. But I would have to think that most of them, when they're with their parents or in the homes as they're growing up, whatever that is that they're covered with the health and then they just let it lapse.
Is the demographic of guys, like out of the 15, are most of them Ontario guys?
Well, when you come out of your institution, you have to come back to your home. your home base.
Your home base.
Okay, yeah. Or your home bucket.
Okay,
or,
so like,
so you're
from
coming
Lindsay,
back.
They would send you back.
Back here.
Back to here, okay.
So we can deal with the Ottawa residents.
Okay. Okay.
As yes. they're released from OCDC. If they're in an institution and they would like to relocate to Ottawa, there's nothing stopping us from working with them, but they have to go through the institution.
Process to get there.
Process to get them back over here.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, and then we can work with them.
Yes.
All of our client base right now is Ontario based.
Yeah.
However,
I was just wondering because like, let's say a guy came into the program, you said as an Ontario applying for the health card, it's usually easy. I was just wondering if there was anybody who got through the program who, you know, kind of, you know, had to go through Alberta or, you know, had to, you know what I mean? But they got relocated down this way or whatever. But yeah, you know, blessed, you know. Anywhere and everywhere where we can see things and ask questions, we see light. So it's really good what you're doing down there. And you actually said you go into these institutions, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you meet with these men. Yeah.
Yes, and you meet with
them. Yeah. Hey, you're an ex prisoner and you go in there. Like this is huge, right? So I just, you know, I wanted to give you shout outs for that and say, please, man, you know, God bless you and just keep doing what you're doing because you're definitely on the right path, man. This is a big look for a lot of us who have belief and you know, and things have changed, and you're living proof of that right there. So
it's interesting that you're dealing with men who basically have come from Ottawa and are coming back into the community, right? So they're going to face some interesting challenges. Like there are, particularly among some federal prisoners, they often choose to relocate out of the community where their criminal associates and where their crime patterns existed, because it's hard to start afresh when people are interacting with you as though you're still in the old way. So mm-hmm. What kind of challenges do these people face in terms of disassociating themselves from their previous criminogenic factors or influences?
Well, separating yourself from the community I wouldn't say the community that you may have lived in, but the community where any of the crimes have been committed, you have to separate yourself from that community. Okay, you already have day-to-day challenges that are going to present it rather than have the additional challenge of people perhaps recognizing you and perhaps saying stuff to you or trying to provoke you or whatever the case may be. Or, you know, you've got the housing issue, you've got the job issue, you've got the financial issue. So, you know, it's best to separate yourself from anything that you think is going to create any problem areas. You also have to deal with your families. And families are an important thing, but some will be very supportive. I do not have a good relationship with anybody in my family. So, you know, so I've kind of separated myself from family, saying, you know what, it's just better for me moving forward. I strongly urge my clients to definitely separate yourself from anybody that's judgmental.
Yeah, and that includes family. So, like, I mean, even though family being important, like, I'll speak for myself here. Even though family is very important, sometimes they are very toxic. So sometimes it's not the way to go. So those who don't have family and are coming back, you know, there's still something for you here. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there really is. Like, because sometimes you're going to come back and you're going to have to trust somebody. And, you know, you're going to have to believe you know, in somebody, and that comes with quality. So separation, what David was saying, I mean, it's very important.
And it probably really speaks to the need to start with the housing component first, because you get a lot of people
necessity,
who are,
yeah.
Yeah, you get a lot of people who are leaving, they don't have any place to go, and their buddy who may have been a co-accused at some earlier point says, hey, I've got a couch, you can stay on the couch, and then
and that's how fast it happens.
On the way,
Yeah. It's a way of being demotivated, right? Because you're going right back. You know what was out there. When you're in prison, I don't know if you found David, when you're away from your freedom and your family, are those that matter most to you, whatever you're cherishing, you know, you have time to think and you remember. And then, you know, to only go back is to, you know what I mean? To re-victimize yourself, you know what I mean? So Yeah, it's great. It's great to, you know, see that there's these aspirations of change inside of these individuals that are coming forward now. They're in your program and, you know, they're getting ID and getting housing. Does a bank account come with that? Or like, are you like, no, just like, no, well, I'm not putting money into, you know, into these guys. Like, but most guys, I didn't have a bank account. So like, you know, it's,
he had,
you know,
money like to spend it. You
know? But yes. But, you know, it was very important to obtain those things when I came out and I came back to being the person who they need me to be. So like, are these guys getting set up with that as well? Or
they will get set up with it. You know, there's no, from our program, there's no financial component that we're not depositing money.
It's just
into
guidance,
their
the guidance of, yeah, to the go guidance, and do. Yes. Know,
I will go with them if I have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll do the accompaniment.
Yeah.
But it's getting their bank accounts open. And in a lot of cases, again,
yeah, that way for direct
deposit. Never had a bank account.
That's good. Because that way, if they had housing, I would just say, like, you know, it's very important. For any guy coming back or listening to this now, to get direct deposit and to have
absolutely
that with your, you know, to have that assigned rate to, you know, rate to your landlord, get that, you know, don't play with your rent, you know, keep that going. And, you know, but it's a vital thing. So like, once again, bless, like, love what I'm hearing, man.
You see, a lot of the recidivism is often connected with addiction issues and health problems associated with addiction issues. Are you finding that you have the services in Ottawa to help with that, and that men are motivated to deal if they have a substance use problem to try and do any of your clients have problems in that direction, I guess?
Yes, some of my clients do have problems with both drugs and alcohol. There are some support services available to them. Myself in the program, I can't put them in that program. They've got to want to go into that program. And then I can certainly help them get into those programs, but they have to do all the legwork themselves. Support services are there. Are there enough of them? I would doubt that there are.
So there's areas to build. Like we need to, the whole thing is if there's not enough, listeners need to know. So we can start building more in there and getting people motivated to go in and, you know, but it's just how to get to and who do we start talking to?
In the federal system, men are released often with prescription medication, but they only have 2 weeks. So if they're on any drug that's prescribed that has a psychiatric component, you don't nearly have enough time to link them to a psychiatrist to get the...
No. I'm still on, I just want to shout it out to all the doctors associations that gave us that number. I'm still on the list. I was 173rd on the list, or 75, and I'm still on that thing. You know, like it's very terrible. It's very terrible. On that aspect of it, because, could you imagine, the injustice that you're doing to the victim by releasing somebody who may have, you know, participated in a serious crime against them, and now you're just releasing them with non-meds. Like it's this two weeks, and then it's up. And if you can't get on there, and like I'm still on that waiting list. So it's kind of terrifying. Is there like an outlet for you guys to like get them like family physicians as well? And I'm just wondering, because like that was an area, you know, specifically for myself. So like, and do you yourself, like, were you able to get like a family physician when he came out?
I was one of the lucky ones.
I got a family physician.
And I, you know, I was fortunate in that regard. There's no services in our system that can offer a family doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. We can't dial up and say, hey, we've got a bunch of clients coming. Mm-hmm. Can you, now some of them that are coming out of institutions, you know, for example, Brockville, the social workers in there are connected to a hospital. So those social workers can sometimes help them get a family doctor from that aspect.
Nice.
But it's a very difficult thing to do. And most of my clients right now at this point do not have a family doctor. They're like yourself. They're waiting.
Yes.
So now where they're getting their medical advice is either in the hospital or a clinic.
Yes. I faced both. I did the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, just very, very curious. And, you know, we got to know where we can always build, like I said. So these are, you know, these are areas, definitely.
Another challenge, employment. Do you have, do you try and connect them with possibilities for working? Or
you probably have put the biggest burr in my saddle is employment. It's a lack thereof for employment for these guys. It's a barrier that society has really put up against anybody being reintegrated back into society. The first step to get back in, of course, is getting housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next step is, how are you going to pay for this housing?
Yes.
But what we've done is we've created these criminal background checks now on everybody that has to have them before employment. And, you know, the employer sees something. If they're not willing to discuss it with the applicant is just done. The application process is over. Now, I'm not saying that it's 100% solution to it, but I've given this a lot of thought, is that, first off, the criminal background check is paid for by the applicant.
Oh,
it's
boy.
Not paid for by the company. Now, some companies, I can't paint everybody with the same brush, some companies will pay for your criminal background check. Most of them do not. So now you've gone and got your background check, okay, and you've submitted it, or which, if you even get an interview, are you being given an opportunity to talk about it? So my solution to that is, let's have the employers pay for the background check. And let's make the background check fit the job that you're going to apply for. The example I use is, I don't want a bank robber working as a teller.
Well, that seems reasonable.
But there's no reason why the bank robber can't be stocking shelves, or, you know,
Doing something else to put food on his table.
And I mean, construction jobs are probably the only one that's consistently getting guys work.
Yeah, because the foremans will always just, all right, come on, you know. But that's unfortunately, that's not enough. You know what I mean? Because what happens to the guy who's, tech savvy? You know,
or not nerdy,
yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you're looking at that, we want everybody being able to have some kind of employment, because otherwise, you know, you don't want people on welfare. So, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the times, convicts, I'm just saying this, are some of the most hardworking people, because when you get in prison, all you want to do is work, right? So the reality is some people compute that by, we're lazy because we only want to work in prison, but that's the only places it's hiring us. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so getting these guys out and giving them a chance to work, you know, it's really gonna, you know, put some food on people's table and give them a, you know, a chance to live like every other human being.
We will be bringing you another episode of Voices Inside and Out. If you would like to comment on our show and or contribute to the show personally to keep this pilot project going, please send your donations to the John Howard Society of Canada, marked Voices Inside and Out.